Hello and welcome to the latest BRC podcast, this time on e-commerce and digital trade. I'm William Madison. We've just seen the European Parliament ratify the UK Trade and Cooperation Agreement and the first 4 months of the new trading relationship. Also, 4 months on the new Great Britain to Northern Ireland e-commerce arrangements under the Protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland have just concluded. Digital trade burgeoned during the lockdown period, and that growth may be here to stay. In this podcast, we'll discuss the future of digital trade and the major changes for retailers to master in the coming months. On today's podcast, I'm joined by William Bain, the BRC's trade advisor, and from Deloitte, Sam Kiley and Aisha Modi. William, starting with you, can you give us a summary on what the change from the single market and the customs union to the protocol has meant for e-commerce involving Great Britain, the EU and Northern Ireland?
Hi. Well, it's really the tale of two agreements. We talk about sort of trade deal between the UK and the EU, but really what we've got to do is to put together the divorce agreement, the withdrawal agreement, which contains the protocol on Ireland, Northern Ireland. It's the set of provisions which applies about 300 EU instruments to trade in goods between GB and NI. So we've got to put together the protocol from the withdrawal agreement plus the provisions from the TCA, which apply to the other parts of UK-EU trade and GB-EU trade in terms of goods. So if we, first of all, kind of take the position under the protocol, the key sense when the different iterations of this were drafted was to try and prevent a hard border on the island of Ireland and to protect the provisions of the Good Friday Agreement. And that means having an all-island economy as far as the Ireland and Northern Ireland are concerned, and not going back to the problems that occurred prior to the peace process. Now, there were different solutions that were advocated for this during the process. One was having a UK-wide customs union and maybe in the final trade agreement, looking at issues of alignment. But in the end, in October 2019, it was agreed that there would be a Northern Ireland only option. And so what that's done is to, although it keeps Northern Ireland in the UK's customs territory, Northern Ireland is applying EU customs law. And so it means that effectively there is a customs and regulatory barrier down the Irish Sea. And so that has brought some real challenges for retailers, particularly in terms of food and perishable products, which, you know, have a very short load time to go onto their lorries and trucks and relatively short travel time compared with other trade journeys for goods. And it's also had quite an impact on things like e-commerce packages and parcels as well. So although the protocol applied from the 1st of January, there have been various easements which have cushioned the impact of it upon retailers and the broader Northern Ireland economy since the 1st of January. Firstly, you know, for postal packets until the 1st of October, you don't need to have a customs declaration with each individual packet or package. But that could change once that easement runs out. Also, your goods have to be not at risk of entering the EU single market in order to qualify for, you know, tariff-free treatment and to be exempt from all the bureaucracy around tariffs. So what that's meant is that companies have had to become eligible to register for the UK Trader Scheme. And that introduces a requirement around establishment. Again, there was an easement on that until the 1st of November, but that runs out. And so we need solutions on that front as well. I think it's also fair to say that in terms of sort of food packages, you know, there are some e-commerce retailers sending, you know, foods and drink across to Northern Ireland. And they found in terms of products of animal origin, the requirements around export health certificates if they're not in the exempt scheme at the moment. They've found those requirements quite difficult too. So there's a lot more cost, a lot more red tape involved, despite what the UK Internal Market Act says, passed by Westminster late last year. We really do have some barriers within the UK internal market now in terms of goods going from GB to NI, and that's proven very difficult for companies to get to grips with. It's probably the number one compliance issue now for companies trading by e-commerce in the UK. In terms of the EU-GB relationship, and of course the EU-UK relationship in other areas, because remember the protocol pretty much deals with trade in goods but not in services, then that is all governed by the TCA, which came into full force on the 1st of May. So the big difference here is that customs declarations are required. So from the 1st of January, businesses sending packages out of GB into the EU have had to have customs declarations, entry summary declarations as well. They've had to comply with the rules of origin within the agreement to claim the tariff-free preferences within the TCA. If they're sending across, you know, milks, cheeses, meats and fish, they've had the requirement to have export health certificates with that. So the full fat border controls, if you like, came in on the 1st of January for GB exports. However, for inbound goods, there's been a phase-in period. And so until the 1st of October, there is no requirement for products of animal origin coming from the EU into GB to have an export health certificate or to pre-notify the UK authorities about those types of goods coming in. That will change on the 1st of October. Also, on the 1st of January, we then have the full inbound customs controls for GB coming in. So the requirement to make a declaration alongside the goods and not for many products using deferred declarations. Compliance burdens around rules of origin as well, which of course expire after 12 months. So a lot more cost and a lot more red tape. One can really categorize it as the biggest imposition of red tape upon importers and exporters in the UK for half a century. And it's enormously different from the trading terms under the single market and the customs union, which applied previously.
Brilliant. Thanks, William. That's a good base to start on. So turning to you now, Sam, what advice has Deloitte been giving to companies in terms of what they should be doing to adjust to these new trading terms, and especially in terms of customs impacts and fees?
Thanks, William. And hi, everybody. So obviously, we deal with clients who've got numerous business models, and it's not a regular occurrence that we come across a retailer that has an identical fact pattern to another. But I think it's fair to say that when we've been speaking to businesses and having the Brexit discussion, whilst there's a level of confidence and clarity on the current operating model and proposed future operating models of Great Britain and EU trade, there's definitely still a nervousness around all things Northern Ireland. And I guess that you could say, when we're having these discussions, that the responsibility, the accountability within the business, the ownership of the Northern Ireland space, and the understanding of the current and optimal position is still, maybe for want of a better phrase, an elephant in the room. There were some businesses who, until relatively late in the Brexit negotiations, didn't realise that there would be a requirement for customs controls when moving goods from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. And I still think that many businesses who are operating the supply flow are still coming to terms with the requirement to do so. And that nervousness is exaggerated by the delay in some of the controls around parcels, and also the 1st of November extension to the UK Trader Authorisation Scheme easement, where businesses can continue to declare goods not at risk without having their own fixed establishment. I think the key thing in the message that we've been giving as Deloitte to all businesses is to take a real grassroots approach to this and go back to the basics, really understand the responsibility that it has. Now, I know this podcast is focusing specifically on digital trade and e-commerce retail, And in most cases, the protection of the consumer experience is paramount in the discussions that we've had. And therefore, the customs compliance in almost all cases is carried out exclusively by the retailer in conjunction with intermediaries, with the main aim being that the customer enjoys what seems to be a seamless service on their behalf. With regard to fees, I think businesses on the whole had performed some form of due diligence with regard to the additional administrative cost burden that Brexit would bring, and also attempted to partner with intermediaries where possible to support that compliance. I think some are finding in cases where those contracts weren't agreed pre-1st of January, that prices across the market have now inflated due to demand. And in cases where a trader may require the intermediary to act as a customs representative in an indirect capacity due to the fact that it isn't established for customs purposes in the relevant territory of import, then this is only amplifying that cost. I think businesses were really enthused when the trader support scheme was introduced as a free of charge mechanism for declaring movements between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. But now that people are actually operating on this, they're struggling to adapt to use the service. And I think this is especially businesses which have got large product portfolios and variations are finding that submitting all the data that enables TSS to make the declaration is a very extremely timely process. And resultantly, businesses are now looking for intermediaries to also support this supply chain. Finally, on this point, at Deloitte, we have a compliance bureau that makes declarations for clients, and we've noticed a real upturn in demand for GB Northern Ireland compliance in the last month or so, as more businesses seem to be grappling with the decision to either hire staff internally and bring them in to make declarations to TSS or outsource that to specialists.
So unpacking some of that, what are the requirements in terms of sending e-commerce packages from Great Britain to Northern Ireland and from Great Britain to the EU? And how might these evolve over time?
Yeah, so we'll start with Great Britain to the EU. So to move goods into the EU, customs declarations have been required since the 1st of January 2021. As I mentioned before, a lot of retailers have spent a lot of time thinking about e-commerce prior to the 1st of January. And in line with my earlier sentiment around the protection of the customer experience, we found it common that the retailers made the decision not only to be responsible for the export from Great Britain, but also the import compliance into the European Union. And therefore, they've had decisions to make around how they go about this. Where they are the importer into the European Union, we've seen it quite common that retailers are actually consolidating orders in the UK and shipping them direct to the country of the consumer, or in some cases, an EU distribution hub. The important thing to note here is where that consolidation is happening and the retailer is the importer into Europe, then the low value consignment rule for customs purposes will not apply, as the aggregated value of the consignment is likely to be in excess of €150. And therefore, customs duty is payable in the country of import and a full customs declaration is required for the whole of that consignment. Now, in other cases, businesses have actually opted to make the customers the importers by amending the terms and conditions on their website or within the contract or sales agreements, etc. But they've still endeavoured to work on a landed cost model where the customer effectively pays any associated future taxes at checkout. So the customs duty and import VAT is calculated at checkout, and the retailer then collects these at the point of sale, forwards these onto the relevant intermediary who is responsible for declaring the goods into the European Union so that they can almost settle the tax bill rather than holding the goods and issuing a duty notice to EU consumers. Like, for example, in the UK, when you may get a notice from the post office to say there's a handling charge in import duty to pay. Now, where the intrinsic value of a consignment is below €150, then a full standard customs declaration is not required, and a reduced data set for customs purposes can be submitted. Again, where the number of individual consignments are consigned to different end customers but are palletized together, then there may be the option in some member states to benefit from low value bulking, where one simplified declaration covers numerous parcels below the €150 mark. However, if only one party is the consignee in that relevant member state, for example, the retailer is the importer, that won't be possible. I'm going to leave Aisha to touch on the EU 2021 VAT changes and the impact that e-commerce consignments, where the value is below €150 mark, back to postal consignments and the requirements for import. In Northern Ireland, currently, it's slightly different, and William's already touched on this. There's currently no requirement to make a customs declaration for a parcel shipped from Great Britain to Northern Ireland where the value is below £135. If the value is above £135 and the consignment is to a business-to-business movement, then the goods must be declared now, and this can be done potentially using the Trader Support Service, as we've mentioned before. Where it is a B2C movement, there is still no requirement to declare. The easement for the below 135 value will fall away for business-to-business trade on the 1st of October 2021. However, it's still not clear what the future will be for the future B2C landscape, and this is yet to be announced. Therefore, Northern Ireland residents can continue to receive goods from Great Britain with no change under current circumstances.
So what more can sellers and platforms do to develop their offers to online customers? And do you see the scope for e-commerce growing further, even as the pandemic eases in the United Kingdom?
Yes, I think the scope will increase. I think realistically, the spending patterns of consumers have changed over the last 15 months. And obviously, there's been little option due to the pandemic and the forced closure of physical retail. You've also only got to look at the vast expenditure on infrastructure that some of the UK's largest retailers are investing in distribution centres as a nod to that trend. And now I regularly drive on the M1 motorway between where I live here and my family's hometown, and the constant development on the motorway side of distribution centres is quite astonishing. I think when it comes to the trade landscape, this is changing to be more facilitative, and legislation supports that. The UK is developing its own free trade agreement portfolio, and this will only increase the potential for the expansion of e-commerce. We already know that key steps are being made to gain accession to the comprehensive and progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the UK government has always been open to a potential free trade agreement with the US for some time. I think one of the key things for businesses in the UK is the key to remain competitive. The UK and the EU Trading Cooperation Agreement only covers goods that originate in the territory of export. Therefore, that would be UK origin goods being shipped to the EU would therefore qualify for preference. Return goods relief may be a mechanism that UK businesses can exploit if selling goods to EU consumers that were either manufactured in the European Union or sourced from EU free circulation before being shipped to the UK. However, we know that in many cases, product will not be manufactured in the EU or in the UK and therefore will not have an origin that suits returns goods relief or the trade and cooperation agreement, and therefore minimizing any double duty impacts on supply chains are key to remain competitive with EU-based retailers. Such customs special procedures, such as customs warehouses, may facilitate this trade.
Excellent. So Aisha, turning to you now, import VAT has proved to be a massive bugbear for EU customers and Great British retailers as well. What are the options for managing the additional red tape and to make the experience as smooth as possible for online shoppers?
Thanks, William. From 1st Jan 2021, for the purchase of goods by EU customers from GB retailers, we have seen issues due to the administrative obligations and the practical challenges for the customers through the need in some cases to pay import duties, which were previously not due where goods moved between the GB and the EU. From a VAT side, it is fair to say that VAT on sales to end customers was always due, both before and after Brexit, in the UK or in the EU country, depending on the supply chain and the nature of the goods. However, now where goods are sold from GB to an EU customer, the way this is charged to and collected from the customer may differ from one retailer to the next, depending on the arrangements in place. And this in turn has the potential to impact upon the customer experience. As you indicate, and as a direct result of the border between GB and the EU, we have seen challenges specifically where the customer does not have visibility of the import VAT and duties payable over and above the retail price at the time of placing the order. And then they are required to pay this before the goods can be collected in their destination country. Whilst it may be too soon for many businesses to assess the overall business impact, we expect that this will be reflected in the customer feedback along with an increase in returns. We are aware that a large number of businesses are considering tailoring their supply chains in order to ensure the overall customer experience is not impacted. As Sam mentioned, some options explored by businesses include the business being the import of record into an EU country to pay the customs duty and import VAT and charging only local VAT to the end customer, or by disclosing or collecting these taxes at the point of sale and engaging with the freight forwarders to pay the import VAT and duties on behalf of the customer.
So will the new approach from the EU from the 1st of July, with the introduction of the extended VAT one-stop shop for third country retailers, including from Great Britain, is that going to improve the situation? And how will this work for customers and for sellers?
Yes, the new rules should help with the seamless movement of goods into the EU, particularly where the goods are less than euro 150 in value and the business can use the import one-stop shop or the IOSS. The new rules should also help reduce the compliance obligations and the current requirement for businesses to register in each EU member state where it may be to see sales above a certain threshold. Instead, businesses selling from the EU would benefit from the one-stop shop that allows registering in one EU member state and to declare VAT across different EU states via the OSS. However, the new rules are not without complexities. There are a large number of retailers that sell goods that are below and above the euro 150 threshold. In such cases, under the forthcoming EU 2021 rules, effective from 1st July, there could be some challenges, such as upgrading the IT systems to ensure that it's capable of recognizing the tax point, which will depend on the value of the goods, the location of the end customer, and a variety of other factors. The business would also need to consider whether it is eligible to benefit from the OSS rules, specifically whether goods are not in the EU at the time the customer places an order, and whether the new OSS rules could lead to double taxation, where, for example, the goods are customs cleared in one EU country, but destined for another EU country, and the customer is listed as the import of record. Whilst the new rules should ease some complexities in the supply chain, each business would need to look at the impact of such rules specific to its own supply chain and the compliance obligations resulting from it. Not to mention that the local rules per EU country would also need to be considered. We have seen businesses making decisions to operate via a specific EU country or operating a distribution center in the EU, or to continue to ship the goods from UK directly to end customers across the EU. Such decisions are influenced by a variety of factors, such as ease of dealing with local tax authorities of that EU country, the volume of returns, customs duty implications, and so on. From a customer's perspective, the new rules should help improve the customer experience to some extent, particularly where the retailer operates under the IOSS. Ultimately, it would come down to the exact arrangements or the supply chain opted by the business.
Lovely. So, William, turning back to you now, e-commerce and policy on digital services is becoming a bit of a hot topic at both the WTO and also the OECD levels. What's happening on both of these fronts later this year?
Yes, so there's a lot happening. I mean, I think the key date in terms of the processes in Geneva at the WTO level is going to be the ministerial conference, the 12th, which occurs between the 30th of November to the 3rd of December in Geneva. And if the states are to get towards having a sort of multilateral agreement on e-commerce that would liberalise things across the world, there really needs to be sort of 10 areas where there is a clean text, as it's called, an agreed text. There was a good development last month where a clean text was agreed on e-signatures and authentication. So that should mean that electronic signatures used in a transaction are not denied their value or effects because they were simply in an electronic form. So that is a good bit of progress, but we have 9 other areas where there needs to be similar progress by the end of November. But it was really interesting that in her first months in post, the new WTO Director General Ngozi Nkonjo-Iweala has made trying to get this agreement done by the end of the year a priority. And in a sense, that would underpin what is being done bilaterally by states in terms of their free trade agreement discussions. So we know the UK sees this as a particular priority in its negotiations with Australia and New Zealand, Canada and Mexico this year, and sees e-commerce as a sort of big win area for UK exporters in the coming years. In terms of what's happening at the OECD level, again, I think last year, you know, this would have been consigned simply to the subscribers to the Financial Times and interest for that group of people. But now, since the change of administration in the US, things have really moved on quite a pace. And what we're seeing is, and this may indeed be one of the things that comes up in some of the discussions at the G7 next month, is a sort of ambition to try and have a global agreement on things like digital services taxes and potentially even on corporation tax. And if that comes off, you know, at the OECD summit in July, then that would be a considerable win. And this all comes from changes in policy from the Biden administration since it took office in January. They reversed the Trump administration's position, which was against having a global agreement on digital services taxes. And also they made it clear through Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen that they wanted to deal even on minimum levels of corporate tax as well. So it's a real sea change in US approach. It's a bold move, could deliver in a bold agreement in July. And of course, that could also impact upon the tariffs, which potentially might be levied on quite substantial numbers of UK consumer goods later in the year under the current Section 301 consultation being undertaken by USTR in Washington right now. So a lot of potential to really broaden through multilateral agreements the scope and the ground rules about how e-commerce will be conducted. And it is quite exceptional, I think, to see the degree of movement that we've seen, even compared with just autumn last year.
Excellent. And I think that is where we'll leave the discussion for today. So many thanks to all of you for joining us. That was a really insightful discussion. If you'd like to find out more, please look on Deloitte's website for more on their VAT and e-commerce advisory and planning services, and on the BRC's Brexit Hub for more guidance on import VAT. Thank you very much for listening in. And from all of us here at the BRC and Deloitte, it's goodbye for now.